Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, college students, are you looking for a way to get ahead this summer? Northwestern University is offering hundreds of undergrad courses online this summer. Choose an intensive sequence in learning. Registration is open now. Visit northwestern.edu/summer for details.
All right, everybody, get your forks out, get your knives out, get your napkins out, get some water out, because you won't have to...
Well, no, you're not going to... I don't know if we even have to have some water.
We're going to talk about something that I don't think I've ever talked about on the show, and that's eating, which is kind of amazing that I don't talk about eating, because it's really what I love to do more than anything. In fact, neck and neck, what do I like doing more, talking or eating? Let me think about that. With me to have the conversation, Amy Matheny from the Chicago Reader, my beloved Chicago Reader, and the world-famous Mike Sula. Yeah, that Mike Sula from the Chicago Reader, who's never been on this show before. I've asked him many times. He's always turned me down saying he's too busy. Just joking, Mike. You've never...
Who?
I just said that.
Just joking. You've never asked.
I know. I sit here. I should have asked him. I know, I just threw that out there. Amy, why don't you start by talking about this recipe book that Mike put together, and then we'll take it away and Mike will explain what's in it.
There was a whole team. I mean, Mike is definitely, you know, the genius by far and the perspective and really took on the mother share of wrangling really a citywide effort. The Chicago Reader, we've been trying to do whatever we can, not only to stay afloat ourselves, but in this time where we lost like 90% of our advertisers, because most of our advertisers, if you read our paper and pick it up, you know that our advertisers are kind of the melting pot of gathering places, Chicago's bars and music venues and theaters and museums and all of those kind of things. We get to engage with this great city of ours. So we lost 90% of our revenue, and we have started pivoting on new ideas of ways not only to raise money for our staff and to keep writing the stories about this city, which could never be more important than those stories are now, to shine light and also to connect us, but also ways to give back to a lot of our reader family, which are our advertisers and the people that we write about and that advertise in our paper. And so the idea came up to do a cookbook called Reader Recipes, Chicago Cooks and Drinks at Home, because we added the drinking part because we are definitely imbibing some during this period as well. And it was a very easy reach to go to some of our just beloved locations. I feel like, you know, Mike just forged ahead. We had been planning a cultural food and cultural festival, surprisingly enough, about 30 days after the shelter in place happened. So some conversations have happened with a lot of diverse cultural institutions, from small to, you know, world renowned. And then I also started, along with Mike and others, because I work with a lot of beverage companies and local distilleries, going out to bartenders and a lot of the venues and places we go, the small watering holes in the very upscale, cool distilleries that are now known on a worldwide scale, like the Weatherby and Koval and the very famous Malort that is Chicago's own, and many more. So it was really just a great soup of putting all of these people together to hopefully lift all boats, as our publisher Tracy Bain always says. And Mike just really, I mean, Mike, you can talk about, like, I know you were so excited to go to some of your, you know, your favorite places and say, give me recipes. And also we're very mindful of the diversity one in the book. Can tell people about some of that.
Yeah, well, we, Yeah, when I say it wasn't just me, it really just wasn't. It was about 80 different chefs and bartenders from all over the city, at operating at every kind of level, everything from, you know, super high-end fine dining to mom-and-pop neighborhood restaurants. And, you know, as I say in the introduction, you know, chefs are busy. Chefs are always busy. And even if they're the kind of people that want media attention, they're often always so busy that they can't give it, you know, even if they want it. And, you know, in a, you know, matter of weeks, you know, we reached out and we got 80 recipes from 80 different chefs and bartenders. And, you know, just because, you know, so many restaurants are shut down during the stay at home place, these people are still working. Like, they're working their butts off. They're trying to stay alive. They're trying to help other people. And just these, all these people from, you know, the broadest array of Chicago chefs and bartenders just really stepped up and brought in some really, really great recipes. Everything from super sort of complicated, involved, you know, weekend-long cooking projects to super simple and delicious things that you can pull together out of whatever you have left in your pantry before you brave the supermarket.
Well, and I love that perspective, Mike, that you kind of brought early on, which was like, let's just kind of see what chefs, if we opened up the pantry, what they're kind of throwing together to just give them some inspiration, you know, of being quarantined at home for another day. And that came up with some compelling different concoctions that we got. Maybe, you know, people using things like chickpea sauce and Spam has become, right, like a new...
Yeah.
A new staple of COVID-19.
I am really looking forward to making a food writer and pizza maker Dennis Lee's Spam bourbon pate. Mm. I have the ingredients. I bought them all like right before on my last trip to the grocery store. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Before we run through, go ahead. I just wanted to get Amy, tell people where they can get the book just before we take the deep dive.
Well, definitely they can purchase the book at chicagoreader.com/recipe book. That's chicagoreader.com/recipe book. But, you know, we have a lot of other things we've got, you know, that we're selling right now with Chicago Reader. And so, you know, when you go to our chicagoreader.com page, you'll see a button that says ways to support us. And if you click on that, the cookbook is just now the most recent added as of yesterday afternoon to a bevy of things, from masks and give money back to MedShare, to our limited edition puzzle, which is almost sold out, our coloring book, which has been flying off the shelves, our stoned book, the 420 companion, because it's 420 every day of the year, that we launched on April 20th. And then also now we're starting to launch some of these overview books of our writers. And the first one that we're launching is, you know, Chicago Pop Stars, Hardcore Heroes, and House Legends, 10 Years of Chicago Reader Music Features by Lior. So, you know, it's, and that book has been doing very well. We've been breaking any of our expectations on that book as well. And these things, I should just say, we call them books. They are books. You will be mailed an actual book. And the cool thing about the cookbook is that it wipes down really easily. It's spiral bound. It's got a glossy cover, but the pages are also laminated because, you know, I like to lay on the middle of the island and then you start doing stuff, right? It gets messy. But you also, if you prefer to cook with an iPad, if you buy the printed copy, you get the PDF automatically. So if you're working on iPad and you're flipping through your recipes and you like that tablet on your island, that will work. You could give the copy to a friend if you like the PDF, or you can just buy the PDF. That's the most affordable, but any of those ways help us and help hospitality workers.
Mike, talk about some of the recipes that you particularly enjoy that are in this book.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, I had my mind on the Spam Bourbon Pate, and I was thinking of some of the simpler ones that are really sort of geared toward you know, times when you don't necessarily have a brimming pantry, maybe don't have a lot of money in the bank account. Emily Sperlin, the pastry chef from the great Lula Cafe, turned in the Desperate Times Pie, which was something that came from West Virginia during the Depression, which is basically, you know, a sweet dessert pie based on vinegar, sugar, water, and flour. And it comes together into this nice sort of like confection that is just kind of like perfect for this kind of thing. On the other hand, we have the great legendary chef Zhang Zhouho from Everett Restaurant turned in his Eiffel Tower souffle, which is something that it's like a 3-page recipe. He's a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah.
You have a lot of patience. This is kind of the thing for you. I mean, we just have these kind of things that sort of like span the entire spectrum of difficulty and simplicity. You know, I said Brian Bruns from Great Logan Square, sort of Alpine Smokehouse Flat and Point, gave us this fruit-paste sourdough recipe that's going to take you all summer to master. But if you do it like a tenth as well as he does, it'll be a success.
Well, and bread is like the big thing now, Mike, right? Like, I know that like in our household, my partner has started the sourdough starter a month ago, smelled god awful in our house, but now we've been having bread like nonstop. Like she found like a place to get her flour from this little, you know, farm in like Indiana that's been sending us flour. It seems like the whole world is kind of bread nuts, but I mean to have your eyes on that recipe, which is very well known and so intricate, is so cool. You know, so cool they gave that up. You know.
And you have a new pet in your house with a sourdough starter. You got to keep that thing alive. You can't let it die.
Yeah, it has to get fed like every other day or something. I don't know. We've learned how to make crackers from the leftovers, even. So I haven't. Yeah. I just enjoy them. But it's kind of cool. And I love that there's just so much of the different flavors of our city. That I think also was just being influenced on the excitement that you had around some of the restaurants you were talking to for the now delayed food and culture festival that we were going to do. But I'm really excited about some of these mom and pop, you know, recipes that maybe are passed down through, you know, generational cooking.
Yeah, that was a disappointment. We had to postpone that, but we did get recipes from a lot of people that were going to participate. We have, Garifuna Flava did their Belizean chicken stew. Yolanda Castillo is the great chef there. Turned that in. That's a family recipe that goes back a long time. Just a nice, big, warm, comforting bowl of love right there. Mm-hmm. Georgina Pereira from Sinha, Brazilian cuisine, has the Brazilian empanadas. That's a good like afternoon project that'll keep on giving. Those will keep for a while. They'll freeze well. Okay. Go ahead, Ben.
Do you do cooking as well as eating, or are you just an eating kind of guy?
No, I love to cook. Cooking's one of those things that makes me feel like I have some control in an otherwise completely chaotic world. So yeah, I love to cook, and I've been cooking through this as we've been working on it too.
So, what are some of the recipes that you yourself have prepared that are in this cookbook?
Well, one of the first things I did was the pimento mac and cheese from Honey Butter Fried Chicken. That's Christine Sikowski and Josh Culp. It's super simple. It is it's literally kind of like a cheese, you know, normally you make a mac and cheese, you're making a bechamel, which is, you know, a classic fancy French sauce. This avoids all that. It's basically like Merck's beer cheese melted down with some dairy and pureed pimento pepper. Super simple, super easy, delicious, comforting. I'm going to make Jurassic's umami cheese crackers, which brazenly calls for MSG. MSG is an underrated monosodium glutamate, is a natural ingredient. Don't let anyone tell you any different. The bourbon pate, you know, all kinds of stuff in here. Rob Levitt has this fantastic bolognese meat sauce based on the classic Marcella Hazan recipe. That's an all day thing. I think I'm gonna tackle next. That's just a super nice, rich ragu to pour over your rotini pasta.
I saw, by the way, it was funny you should mention that mac and cheese, because I was looking through the list of the recipes. That's the one I actually wrote that down, because I love, first of all, I got this thing for cheese, Mike, that I don't think I've ever revealed to you, but I really love cheese. And then the other one, I have this complete and utter and total obsession with chicken. My love for chicken is almost as deep as my love for the Chicago Bulls. So there's this honey buttered fried chicken. I saw, man, have you made that one? The honey buttered fried chicken?
You are, I hate to tell you this, Ben, but we do not have a recipe for honey butter fried chicken. We have a recipe from the restaurant, honey butter fried chicken. In fact, it's the mac and cheese recipe.
Oh, man, no about. Wonder I saw it. I thought it was honey butter fried chicken.
But hey, Ben, listen, we do have a fried chicken recipe. Okay. Jimmy Papadopoulos of Belmore Restaurant gave us the recipe for his Firebird, which is a fried chicken sandwich, which is another one of those big projects that is just going to pay off in spades when you're done with it.
Wait, what do you mean by a big, how big of a project?
Well, it's a little bit involved. It might take you the afternoon, but I've eaten the sandwich. He's now offering. Belmore's now doing carryout, and I have eaten the sandwich, and it's just a thing of beauty. It's magical. And just think how good you'll feel about yourself if you can pull it off.
I don't know. I would feel really good about myself, Mike. Maybe next year. Maybe next pandemic. But my wife is a really good cook. I'm very fortunate in that regard. Now, Mike, so what? How's your life been during this pandemic, man? I mean, the restaurants are closed. So, like, what are you doing with yourself?
Ben, I was made for this. I had like a porch full of seedlings on the back porch. I had meat hanging in the garage. I looked like the Unabomber. I was made for this. No, but seriously, there have been lots of stories. I mean, just the fact that the restaurant industry was hit so hard, hit first, and they're going to be the last to recover. I mean, that doesn't mean that there aren't any stories. I've been busier than I've ever been before. There's a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, and on top of it, you've been doing this book, which is a pretty big thing to wrangle in like a month, you know? it's a huge project, you know, that you did edit. So, I mean.
Yeah, it was a big project.
And
I'm actually going to, you know, I'm going to be, you know, the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be talking about a lot of these chefs that are in this book who are still doing really good work. You know, they may not be able to have, people coming in and dining yet, maybe soon, but they're still working, they're still hustling.
I think it's super cool too that, like, you know, I mean I made some asks, a number of us made asks, you know, to people just to say, hey, Mike's gathering these, you know, Mike and the team are gathering these recipes. But I just loved how quick people were just so happy to send out, you know, a recipe. And you know, we made it simple for them in some ways, but, you know, they still have to pause and take the time and share their creative talents. And when things are, you know, when we asked them, it was a little over a month ago, you know, and some of them had already pivoted, I think, to doing curbside or, you know, still working in the back of their kitchens. And some of them, you know, weren't, had laid off staff. And so it's just, going to be nice to have this book, and at least for me, because I don't cook, but I do shake cocktails pretty much nightly right now, and I'm going to be raising a glass to, like, all of these people. I mean, just for, you know, lending your gifts and time to us. So
yeah, a lot of people stepped up.
By the way, I just want to give a shout out to Karen Hawkins, who was a co-editor of the book, and Karen, dear friend of mine, great editor at The Reader. So thank you, Karen, for when she's done with this, she has to edit my stories, Mike. So she really covers the waterfront, all kinds of things.
Me too.
And
me too. Well,
go ahead.
We should say too that, like, you know, 15% of all these book sales are going to Comp Tab Relief Fund, And it's a fund that's been started between support staff and the pilot light chef. And they're helping hospitality workers who are laid off or who are furloughed right now during the pandemic. But I also hope that in the back of the book, there's a really great section. I mean, you'll get that whether you get the PDF version or whether you get the printed version. And, you know, should just say that, like, it's $30 for the PDF. It's $55, but that includes your shipping and you're getting the PDF for the printed copy, you know, and includes all your costs to ship it to you, in addition to the bonus PDF. You know, in the back of this book, we really ask all of the businesses to shine a light on what they're doing. You know, do they have their own relief funds? And, or they're, you know, doing curbside or they're doing delivery or, you know, what are they doing in this effort? Like they have a limited menu or here's their website to see what their menu is each week. And a lot of the bars, you know, some of the bars were doing like selling their beer. And then what the distilleries are doing, you know, we have pretty much, you know, a number of the distilleries that we feature, all local distilleries in the book. And, you know, many of them are on the very front lines early on in making hand sanitizer, but now they have pivoted as well now to letting people come and get alcohol or get hand sanitizer from them. So all of those efforts, all those resources on all of them are all linked in the back of the PDF. So you can go straight to their businesses. And hopefully you will consider on, you know, Takeout Thursday, which we have in Andersonville where I live, you know, to go out and frequent it at a different place or to call, you know, one of these distilleries or some of the people that aren't in the book that are just great local breweries, you know, and say, hey, I'm going to come up and pick up some beer. You know, Virtue Cider is delivering to the door, but, you know, some people have it, like, well, you know, head over to Mars or head over to Half Acre, depending upon where you live in the city, and, you know, pick up some beers, you know. So we can all support beyond this book, you know, and connect you to all these businesses.
Mike, lots of love to go around.
Mike, I was going to ask you, what's your thoughts of the future for restaurants in Chicago once we move to the next phase in the next couple months? Dennis and I have been talking about leaving. I'm doing this show from my my attic, and we're talking about inching back to the studio, just like testing the water. What's that going to be like for restaurants in the next couple months?
I don't know. You know, it is a huge topic of conversation and consternation in the restaurant industry right now. I mean, there are, you know, even with safe social distancing measures, like, you know, restaurants are not going to be able to reopen on the same scale that they used to before. There's got to be distancing between tables. You know, you have to think about server diner interaction. You know, it's just a mess. You know, and I don't want to bring this conversation down, but there is a lot to overcome right now to get back to where we were, and a lot of places aren't coming back. At the same time, a lot of places are opening. We got a vegan restaurant up the street from me, like just opened a week ago, just doing carryout. So I mean, it's, you know, the spirit isn't dead. I mean, this, you know, the hospitality industry is not, you know, it's notoriously thin profit margins. That's just one of the reasons why it was hit so hard by this pandemic. But it's also, you know, it's a passion for people. Like, people are born into this industry and they live it. So, I mean, it's going to come back. I don't know if it's going to come back the way we knew it, but, you know, I think it is going to come back. But I don't think anybody really has the answers about what it's going to look like.
When you saw the response in Wisconsin, and we've talked a lot about this on this show, when the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin ruled that the governor had gone too far in ordering shutdowns of restaurants and bars, etc., and within a day, I think bars opened up, and there were pictures in the newspaper of people crowding right around the saloon, right around the bar itself, and the no masks. What was your thought when you saw that?
I just felt dreadful, like a dread in the pit of my stomach about it. I mean, the scenes that you saw there were not, those weren't a responsible reopening. you know, and I really hope, I think the sense I get from the Chicago restaurant industry is that we are not Wisconsin. And I have a feeling that that is not going to happen here. I think people are just as worried about the health and safety of their employees and their customers. I just think the restaurant as industry as a whole takes this very seriously in Chicago. They're concerned about other things. You know, they're concerned about the screwed up way that the federal government sort of excluded independent restaurants from the PPP funds. I mean, you couldn't secure those funds if you weren't operating a restaurant, because if you had to shut down, you had to lay off your employees. So, I mean, that was a mess. The Chicago restaurant industry is dealing with things like that. And I mean, they are starting to think about reopening and what that looks like. It's, I don't think anybody knows yet.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And so many people are working with these like skeleton crews, you know, too, the ones that are trying to, keep serving with takeout and curbside pickup. And so I think that's hard too, with the extra measure that will go on people who haven't really had a break, you know, because margins are just so small, especially in the food business. Maybe less so in the bar industry, I don't actually know, but in the food business, you know, you have so much perishable and you have to keep your costs so in line. That's the success of a restaurant in this city, in any city, in any town. There's a volatility right now, an unpredictability that we're all feeling, no matter what businesses you're in, but especially for those small independent restaurants. You know, even if they have two restaurants, you know, you might think, okay, well, they're big, but they're still on such tight margins. And we're hearing that in other major cities as well, if with this reopening, it'll take even more energy and I think more care and attention and more understanding from those of us who go to them and they're trying to support them, that, you know, they're going to be doing the best they can and we're going to have to kind of let them learn a little bit, because it will be a lot of pressure, you know, just kind of like the straps of trying to maintain all of the standards that they try to maintain, because there's already a high level of standards in restaurants that we don't have in most other establishments. So they deal with food, right?
Yeah.
Sanitation levels and all of that, which they know, so they're excellent. So they will navigate this, but it is going to be kind of like operating a new restaurant, even if you've had your restaurant for a decade or so, you know, here in the restaurant, in the city.
In some ways, it's pretty ironic. When this first started, I talked to a restaurant owner, Scott Worsham, who owns Bar Biscay and MSK. And Yeah, they're great. And now he's operating Bar Biscay as now kind of a bodega. You know, he's selling essentials and staples and things like that. But he pointed out that restaurants are mandated by law to be clean and safe. Yep. And food safety is priority number one in restaurants. If anybody can pivot to a new reality, it's restaurants. Which again is why it's so ironic that this is the first industry to get clobbered.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are on top of these issues.
All right, now.
Yeah, and Mike, I'd love to know your thoughts on whether or not, like, people who pivoted quickly to, like, keeping crews on and trying to do takeout, how do you think that impacts the business who actually didn't pause and just immediately pivoted and started, you know, making food for people to leave with their restaurant, as opposed to those people who maybe close their doors and are trying to reopen? It feels like a different stress, right? I mean, one, they each come with their positives and negatives. Crew may be more refreshed, you know, the other crew more tired, but they've been able to maintain a business and kind of a that people are thinking of them, because they've had to, as you said, with Bar Biscay. That's a really great, really great example of, still serving food to people, still being, because I think, grocery stores are doing, many grocery stores are doing an excellent job. And I mean, from the larger you know, like a Trader Joe's type chain to like, you know, I have a small like Edgewater Produce or Harvest Time up near me, you know, really doing a good job. And they've seen the benefits of people being at home and eating food and cooking more. But I think that's going to be an interesting balance of if you close and you try to open up refreshed and somehow you survive being closed, or if you just kept going and the fatigue and how do you get more staff on, you know, when you're probably just breaking
even. Yeah, it's been interesting. You saw a lot of places that weren't really geared for takeout shut down, but then, you know, a few of them have made the pivot and come back, and others have pivoted in interesting ways. Like Eric Williams is a chef I've been talking to a lot lately from Virtue Restaurant in Hyde Park. He did the second installment of our like revamped key ingredient pandemic pantry series, where he did a video about what to do with pickled eggs. But anyway, Virtue Restaurant has had a great couple of years. He's a James Beard nominated chef. There's been tons of accolades and awards, doing just sort of like Southern comfort food down in Hyde Park. And they, you know, when this all hit, they did, they launched a GoFundMe, and they were doing carry out, you know, just for the neighborhood. And they hit their GoFundMe goal, and they were able to use that to pivot to providing meals for University of Chicago hospitals. And that's, so they shut down takeout. They're not doing that anymore, but they're feeding residents in University of Chicago hospitals now. Mm-hmm. Like that's their business. And he's been able to keep he told me 8 to 15 people, as depending on how many orders they have to fill, he's been able to keep employed. So the creative ways people have been able to stay open, even if they're not, you know, even if they're not cooking for the general public, has been interesting. Jose Andres came through town. He's been working with some restaurants feeding first responders. You know, through his organization, he's been able to keep a few afloat. I'm not sure what the exact numbers are, but I know, you know, it's more than a few, I think. Sorry, Ben.
I was going to say, Mike, we have to close down. I'm waiting for you to do your greatest hit book. I think you're ahead of me, but you have to get yours in before I get mine in. And we'll bring you back. We'll go through that just like I did with Lior. It's my fault that I've not reached out to you earlier. So it took a pandemic to get this done. So that's about the one good thing to come out of this pandemic. Amy, one more time before we head out, tell people how they can get a copy of the recipe book.
Well, you just need to know our main website. I mean, just go to chicagoreader.com. You'll see ways to support and click there, and you'll see the Reader Recipes, Chicago Cooks and Drinks at Home there. You'll also see a lot of our other products, our very stylish masks that we just did with Threadless, are super cool, and Merlot did our graphics on them, the street artists. But also you can go to chicagoreader.com/recipebook. And again, it's a PDF download just for $30, and that really helps the Chicago Reader. And just so you know, we're offering a lot of free promotion right now of any of these efforts that our family members, and that by family members, I mean these bars, these restaurants, these theaters, you know, whatever people are doing right now, you know, we're trying to help them succeed from all those efforts that you just heard Mike talk about. So $30 for a PDF download, or if you buy the print edition, $55, you get the print edition, you get the PDF download, and that includes all shipping. And again, that print edition, it's really sweet. It's spiral, laminated, wiped down, easy to clean while you got it on your messy counter making that pimento mac and cheese. That, along with maybe like a, I don't know, cut with a Koval pantry sour or Mary Pickford cocktail from Gadabout, that might be real nice on a stinky night like tonight. So, We would just really appreciate your support, and it keeps our great writers like Mike and so many others across our paper telling the stories of Chicago. Plus, you're giving 15% back to hospitality workers who have been laid off or furloughed right now during this time in our city, direct funds.
All right, very good. Thank you much, Amy, and thank you, Mike. You too, take care, all right?
Thanks, Ben. All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye,
Ben.
Everybody.
Take care.
There you go. You off? Yeah. All right, guys.
They're off.
Oh, they're off. Take care. They were all saying take care. I was like, I'm not going to say it too.
Bye.